So you texted me that you needed to set up your stuff, and I was like, perfect, I'm going to lay down for 5 minutes. And that was a mistake. I did not want to get back up.
That has been me lately. I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm tired. I'm just going to go lay in my bed for like 15 minutes. And then I wake up like 4.5 hours later. It's like, why do I keep doing this to myself?
Yeah. And I've never been like a nap person, but I think it's a combination of stress, summertime, and allergy issues that I just, as soon as like 3 o'clock rolls around, I just lie down on the couch and I stay horizontal until like six.
For me, it's Hannibal, the new apartment. I don't know what it is. Before we were here, he would lay down with me at midnight and we would get up at like 8 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And that was our routine. Now he lays down at like 1 and he gets up at 3 in the morning and he wakes me up every single hour on the hour until 7 when he proceeds to knock over everything in the entire house and eat every piece of plastic in the entire house until I get fed up and get out of bed. So I get to sleep a couple of hours every single night.
Mm-hmm. You're like a new parent.
I'm not having it. I got a pet instead of a baby for a reason.
Yeah. Yep. That's true. He's like one of those medieval town criers. It's like 3 o'clock and all is well. It's like, okay, why'd you wake me up?
I get it. It's 3 a.m.
I didn't need to know. Why'd they do that? Did they really do that? Or is that just in the movie Robin Hood? Or is it for real?
Could you imagine having that job, though, being the most annoying fucking person in the entire world? And then somebody like seeing you at the supermarket? You've got to be the most hated person in town.
Yeah, they just throw all sorts of produce at you. I watched the movie Robin Hood for the first time in a very long time a couple days ago. And I have to say that Prince John is one of my all-time favorite animated characters. I don't know what it is. I cannot get enough of Prince John.
You have too many things for too many animated characters.
I'm not attracted to him. I'm honestly not. But there's something about him. He has like such a presence and everything he does is fucking hilarious. The way he beats up on that snake, it's heartwarming to me. I don't know why.
I will take your word for it.
And I love all the animals in that movie. The turtle is the cutest. The fucking raccoons. I don't need to get into it. It's a great movie. What are we doing here?
The same thing we do every other week.
Yes. Welcome to Saints and Witches. I'm Sarah. I'm a Catholic.
I'm Liz. I'm a witch.
And on this podcast, we tell each other stories about saints and witches.
It's a good grand old time.
It is a grand old time. Yes. And today we are talking about
Russia.
Russia, the sort of Slavic area.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a loose grouping of Slavic type lands.
That general vicinity on the map.
Mm-hmm. The place over there, all the way over there.
Yes.
You look at a map, they're all the way on the other side of us.
Unless you live there, then I'm sure your map, you're in the center.
I am freaked out by that idea.
I am very freaked out when I see other people's maps and they're oriented differently.
Yeah. I think we're like, as a nation, we're a nation of narcissists.
I also got freaked out whenever I found out like Australia like is different because they're down there and they're like upside down.
They're upside. What? What do you
like,
mean?
They're chilling on like essentially the bottom of the earth.
Yeah. And so their maps, like, they're in the middle, and then, like, Antarctica would be, like, where South America is to us.
It's just really weird.
That's scary.
I don't know. I don't like something, other maps.
Something I think about often is in Antarctica, in, like, public schools or whatever, like, elementary schools in, not Antarctica, in Australia. Like, public schools in Australia.
They're very different.
Right. But like, since they're the opposite of us in terms of like climate and seasons, like they mm-hmm. have summer when we have winter, in the public schools, when they're learning about the holidays, what kinds of illustrations and decorations do they make for Christmas?
I don't know.
Do they do like a sun? And they're like, oh, on Christmas, I love to go to the beach, you know?
Is it the same way in Florida? I don't know.
Like, do they, right, because they don't have snow, so they wouldn't make, like, snowmen.
I don't understand any other place than the place I live.
I know, I'm having a crisis. if you live in Australia, will you please tell us what you guys draw in school for Christmas decorations?
How does your country work?
Also, how do maps work? Who makes them?
Very curious about that.
Yeah, very curious about a lot of things. Okay, we should start.
We should. So, welcome to our very first, like, listener-requested episode that's not requested by somebody that we know.
Not requested by our moms.
Or, like, best friends.
Yeah.
Complete stranger this time. Mm-hmm. I have been really excited to finally get around to this episode, and this request comes from, is it somebody on Instagram?
I think her first name is Brianna. I don't know if it's Brianna or Brianna, but it's got an I, so I'm thinking Brianna. I don't want to say her last name just for privacy
just
reasons.
In case.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for reaching out to us, mm-hmm. and requesting this, asking me to cover Baba Yaga. So I will be covering her, touching on her, but also hags in folklore kind of in general. It's also just cool to be over in like the Slavic countries, where I do not believe we have ventured before, except for when we hit Poland. So, yeah. Kind of unexplored territory for us for the most part.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Mm-hmm. I make no promises about my ability to pronounce anything in Russian today. I tried to learn Russian once, but Duolingo kept teaching me phrases like, I left my apple in the taxi. So useful.
Is that a common occurrence in Russia?
I don't know.
They're always doing that. They're always just leaving their apples all over the place. It's crazy over there.
Super useful. Super useful. And then I started dreaming in Russian for like a week, which gave me a major headache. So I had to stop learning.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever done that thing where, like, if you're editing an essay or anything, you dream that you're editing the essay and you wake up and you're just like super exhausted mentally.
Yeah, I do that a lot. I have those kind of like stress dreams where I have to like do work in the dreams, mm-hmm. which the reason I'm sleeping is so that I can not do work.
Yeah. So the Russian thing was kind of like that, where it was like I didn't understand anything that was going on and it was just giving me a major headache to understand anything.
Yeah, that's too much.
Yes, I left my apple in the taxi was not helping me in my dream.
You're like, I'm so sorry, everybody. I left my apple in the taxi.
I've got to go.
That's all you could say.
Yes. Hello. How are you? I left my apple in the taxi.
Sorry. Can't talk right now.
The start of every conversation is a goodbye.
That's so poignant.
Anyway, I always thought Russian was a cool language, though.
Yeah.
So Baba Yaga, or Baba Yaga, as I should probably start saying throughout this episode, because I say it the like Americanized way and not the Russian way. Baba Yaga is 100% like a figure of folklore, which opens a really interesting like door for me to be able to talk about folklore figures in the future in a way I haven't really done. Mm-hmm. I've talked about some witches who are more folktale than historical fact on the show, but never anyone that's like straight up just unabashed folklore. Baba Yaga is a creature I would put more in the category of something like Bigfoot or Krampus than say something like Mother Shipton or Aradia.
Okay.
I am staying out of witch trials today and out of statistics and attitudes about witchcraft in the region, and I am just gonna look at folklore.
Cool.
Yeah, and before I get into Baba Yaga, who is a hag, I want to talk about hags, what they are, why they're important. So first, just what is a hag? A basic definition here. Hags are typically depicted as ugly old women dressed in rags. Several of them have odd colored skin, blue, green. A lot of them live in these desolate, like isolated places, caves, forests, misty lands, bodies of water. They're cannibals, a lot of them eating or at least killing children. Mm. They know magic. And this is by no means an ironclad definition of what a hag is. A hag differs greatly, like by hag and by folktale.
Mm. We need to examine them on a hag by hag basis.
Yes.
Understood.
Yes, very much. Hags are popular in Celtic mythology, but you see them crop up in England and Slavic countries and Germany and Japan, all over the place. People were just really scared of old women, I guess, just like super terrified that granny was going to nom on their kids. I don't know what that fear was about, but
old women can be very scary.
If you have ever worked retail, you know.
Yeah. Any kind of like service industry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're terrifying.
Old women, they'll scare you shitless.
Yeah.
So, anyway, people may have been terrified of old ladies, at least in the stories where hags are like these cannibalistic old women. That's not always the case, which is kind of my point here. Hags differ so much between folktales across cultures. Sometimes they're demons that sit on your chest and give you sleep paralysis. Sometimes they're helpful. Sometimes they're harmful. Sometimes they're goddesses. Hags also aren't always like starkly delineated from other creatures within a single culture's folklore. And because of both of these things, hags end up conflated with crones, conflated with the beldam, conflated with witches. And as a result, you end up with this soup where everything kind of gets conflated with everything. The lines between all of these creatures get extremely blurred.
Mm.
A witch is given its own section in the Book of Russian Folktales I use, so it is its own thing, even in Russian folklore. But it's hard to understand how a witch is much different from what Baba Yaga is, which we'll see. So it's like no surprise to me, really, that hundreds of years down the line from the inception of these folktales, we accidentally have this picture of the stereotypical witch as, you know, the green-skinned old woman who lives in the woods and maybe eats kids.
Mm-hmm.
But just know that technically a hag and a crone and a beldam and a witch and a Mara and all of this stuff are different things.
Okay.
And fun fact, in a lot of early drawings, witches are actually depicted as beautiful young women.
Hmm.
It is.
I bet there's something sexist going on. That's my prediction.
Yes, they're very beautiful young women. And then it is over the decades, the centuries, that they start turning into these old hag, ugly figures in paintings and in drawings.
Interesting.
And then we end up with like the Halloween figure that we have today.
Yeah.
Before I get into Baba Yaga, though, I want to preface with my source material, which I've started doing lately. I pulled from a lot of articles here and there around the internet, but as we get into the actual folktales where Baba Yaga is a character, I used Russian folktales, capital R, capital F, by W.R.S. Ralston, an English text published in the 1870s that draws on, and I'm getting ready to fuck up a whole bunch of words and names, so bear with me, that draws on Russian versions of Baba Yaga's skazkas or skazkis or folktales published by, and here's a fun set of names, Afanasyev, Kujikov, Erlenwein, and Chujinsky. And I'm making guesses on most of those because not all of them had pronunciations online.
I thought it sounded great.
Thanks. I am going to take that to heart. That makes me feel better. But these guys took down folktales, and they're kind of noted in like their fields. So he took their like Russian versions and he translated them into English and kind of just synthesized them all together. I say that I'm using this version because there are so many versions of Baba Yaga's stories. No two are alike at all. Even like the same story, if you find it by two different people, like the details are going to wildly differ. And part of this owes to the fact that she belongs to several countries and regions. You're gonna see her in like northern Russia and southern Russia and over in like Poland, and you're gonna see her in like every country in between. She as a figure isn't even consistent across countries and across regions, so her stories are different and she is like a creature is different. So the stories I'm telling today aren't the one true version of Baba Yaga. Like, I want to get that across. They're just a version that's okay. Out there. Ralston even states in his preface that he didn't have a dictionary good enough to make extensive use of the South Russian collections out there. So who or what is Baba Yaga? She straddles the line between, like, person and creature pretty heavily. She is this hag who lives in the woods in a house with chicken legs, a detail that I will get back to in a second with a fun fact for you. This house or hut is ringed by skulls spiked onto a gate. And the house itself has a doorknob that's keyhole is filled with teeth.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes.
I vibe with that aesthetic. Baba Yaga herself is noted as having iron teeth. And in at least one story I read, I didn't write this down. She's trying to get to somebody who's hiding up in a tree. And she goes like full beaver on the tree.
Not full beaver.
Full beaver instead of climbing the tree. But like her teeth keep breaking or they're not strong enough. So she goes to a smith and has him make her iron teeth. So at least in that version, that's why she has iron teeth.
Got it.
She also pretty much across the board rides this giant mortar and pestle through the woods, using the pestle as a rudder and this broom that she always has on her to sweep away the tracks it plows through the dirt behind her as they form.
Wow, that's nifty.
It is. In some accounts, Baba Yaga can petrify people to stone, not by looking at them, but like through magic. In a lot of accounts, Baba Yaga is a cannibal, but she's interesting in that some people paint her as this like insidious, murderous creature. And yet in other stories, she's like this helpful creature instead. In the main story I'm going to tell in a second, Vosalisa the Fair is the name of the story. Baba Yaga is a helpful figure, where you do what she says and you ask the right questions and she does you a favor at the end. Baba Yaga is a name you're going to find several etymologies on if you Google it. Some say Baba comes from babushka, old woman, and Yaga comes from a shortened version of the name Jadwiga or Hedwig.
Mm.
Some will say Baba Yaga simply means old woman. You will see it meaning hag of terror, evil old witch, being a bastardization of a Tartar ruler's name. I'm not sure there's a definitive answer on where her name comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But to circle back to the chicken foot house before I move on, which is like my favorite thing about Baba Yaga ever since I learned who she was when I was little.
Yeah, that's what I think of whenever I think of her, is the hut on chicken legs.
Mm-hmm. I learned something during my research that I did not know, which is that nomads in Siberia used to put storerooms up on stilts so that, like, nothing could get into it while they were off, like, doing their traveling and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I am going to show you a picture, if I can, through the webcam.
It looks like chicken feet.
It looks exactly like chicken feet.
So that's where it comes from. Oh, that's so cool. So somebody, like, delirious wandering through the woods one day stumbled upon that and was like, oh my God, it's a chicken house. That's super cool. I love that.
There are a lot of like theories that is what influenced like the imagery of Baba Yaga's house, that's what it's drawing off of.
Mm-hmm.
The source that I found also says that pagans made similar buildings to house like their idols, and that Slavs used cabins like this for cremation purposes.
Woof, there's a lot going on in these huts.
Mm-hmm. So where exactly like it came from, what like group of peoples, can't like exactly put your finger on, but probably like these weird cabins up on stilts.
Mm-hmm.
And I will absolutely put that picture on Instagram for you guys because it is super cool.
Yeah.
Anywho, in the same way the hag folklore is like shared, it's like all across all these different cultures and everything, you are going to recognize a lot of the stuff in the story I'm getting ready to tell you as things you've seen in other stories from other cultures. So there's just little like tidbits that you will definitely recognize. So without further ado, here is the story of Vosalisa the Fair. Entirely paraphrased. for new listeners, don't ever think that I'm ever quoting anything ever. I paraphrase everything.
Yeah, even my quotations are sometimes paraphrased.
Yeah, like I will say she said.
Yeah, but it's not.
No. Unless I specifically say, like, quote, pause, and then read something, I am always paraphrasing.
Mm-hmm.
So, once upon a time, there was a merchant. He has no name because he's not important, and neither is his wife, because this is a fairy tale.
Right.
The heroine of the story is their daughter, Vosalisa, who at 8 years old has to deal with her mother dying on her.
Oh.
On her deathbed, her mother gives Vosalisa a doll, or a kukla. I think that's just another word for a pretty doll. And tells Vosalisa to keep it hidden from everyone because this doll is special.
Hmm.
If Vosalisa feeds this doll and asks for its advice afterward, this doll will help her solve whatever problem she has.
Neat.
Mm-hmm. Having said this and kissed Vosalisa, her mother dies.
Aww.
Now, her father is a merchant. It's not really a question that he's going to marry again. Like, he's got money, he's got a good job.
Mm-hmm.
But he does mourn Vosalisa's mother an appropriate length of time before he sets his sight on a widow with two daughters. He assumes, because she's a widow with daughters, she's experienced as a wife, housekeeper, and mother, and therefore good for his daughter. But Vosalisa is the most beautiful girl in the village, and her stepmother and stepsisters hate her for this.
Hey, this sounds familiar.
It should. Are you getting some Cinderella vibes, perhaps?
What if I... It actually would have been really funny if I pretended not to know Cinderella. Just like, I don't know what that is. Never heard of it. What?
No, I've never heard of the story in my entire life. Get ready for more Cinderella vibes, because Vosalisa's stepmother and stepsisters decide to overwork her outside to ruin her beauty. They work her outside specifically to make her sunburnt and tanned and like unattractively thin.
Mm.
But to their surprise, Vosalisa gets even prettier. Because what they don't know is that Vosalisa is saving parts of every single one of her meals, the best parts of every single one of her meals, and she's feeding them to her doll at night after everyone is asleep, asking for help, and the doll in turn is doing all of Vosalisa's chores.
Whoa, okay.
All Vosalisa has to do is rest under a shady tree the whole time, every single day.
That's the fucking life, man.
Mm-hmm. This goes on for years. In the meantime, suitors keep coming by asking for Vosalisa's hand in marriage. But her stepmother is pissed and essentially tells them to fuck off and that Vosalisa can get married after her own daughters get married.
Oh, great.
She's like, Vosalisa is the youngest. Like, mm-hmm. her elder sisters have to get married before she can. That's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
When the suitors leave, she beats Vosalisa, like, every single time.
Yikes.
One day, Vosalisa's father leaves on a long business trip. Merchant takes him away. And while he's gone, stepmom is determined to, like, be rid of Vosalisa. So she keeps sending her on errands into the forest where Baba Yaga is known to live.
Oh, great.
Yeah, total dick move.
Mm-hmm.
Notably, Ralston uses Baba Yaga as a singular noun in the story, not a name. So it's the Baba Yaga or a Baba Yaga. Like you might say the werewolf or a werewolf. It implies like the existence of a bunch of Baba Yagas.
Yeah.
Like a species.
Right.
In at least one story, which I'm not covering today, there are three Baba Yagas. So I'm going to say Baba Yaga, like a name. But he does put a or the in front of it throughout the story. Just FYI.
Okay.
Anyway, no matter how many times stepmom sends Vosalisa into the forest, she comes out unscathed. Because unbeknownst to her, the doll is steering Vosalisa far away from Baba Yaga's hut every single time.
Hmm.
But her luck runs out one autumn when stepmom assigns all of the girls chores, lace making, knitting, and weaving, respectively, and leaves them a single candle as light to work by.
Hmm.
After she heads to bed, one of the stepsisters extinguishes the light by her mother's secret instructions.
Spooky.
Spooky. She and her sister then bully Vosalisa, saying they have to complete their chores, but the light is out. What are they gonna do? And then they insist that their needles and their pins give them enough light. I'm guessing that they mean that, like, any small amount of light in the room, like, reflects off of them so that they can see what they're doing.
Yeah.
The story is not very clear on that. I'm like, what? Like, what the fuck do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, your needles give you light.
Yeah.
Vosalisa is weaving. So she's not working with needles and pins in the same way that they are.
Okay.
So they tell Vosalisa that she can't see her weaving with the candle out. So she needs to go to Baba Yaga's for light.
Mm.
Clearly the only option. They have neighbors. They have neighbors.
It's the meme of the guy taking like four steps at once. And it's like, ask this neighbor, ask this neighbor, ask, go to Baba Yaga's hut.
Yes. They're like, you need to go to Baba Yaga's for light. Clear solution here.
Mm-hmm.
They shove Vosalisa out of the room And so she collects her doll from where it's hidden and she heads out into the dark forest. As she walks, a white horse with a white rider appears and passes her, and day breaks. Later, a red horse with a red rider passes and the sun rises. She keeps walking, and as she makes it to Baba Yaga's hut, a black rider on a black horse passes and sinks into the ground, and night falls.
Whoa.
Why her stepsisters again thought that this day-long journey was the answer to a candle being out, I don't know. She literally walks through the entire day into the night again. And she's like, you know what? I can't do my weaving with the sun out. I better keep walking into the nighttime again.
Right. Doesn't make a ton of sense.
No, it really doesn't. But the story needs to happen this way, and therefore it does.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Fairy tales. Mm-hmm. Don't question their logic. They it's fall true. Apart.
Yeah, it's very true.
Outside Baba Yaga's hut is a gate made of human bones mounted with skulls with the eyes still in them.
Ooh.
The gate lock is a mouth full of sharp teeth. And as Vosalisa stands there scared, Baba Yaga rides up on her mortar out of the forest saying, "Fa, fa, I smell Russian flesh," which is very fee-fi-fo-fum.
Mm-hmm.
So more like elements that come from other folktales here.
Mm-hmm.
Vosalisa bows to her and like very, very deeply and says that her sisters have sent her here for a light. And Baba Yaga acknowledging that she knows her sisters, which do we gloss over completely in the story that Baba Yaga just knows her family?
Mm-hmm.
She says that she will give Vosalisa a light if she does some chores for her.
Hmm.
But if Vosalisa says no to doing chores for her, Baba Yaga will just eat her right now instead.
Oh, okay.
Faced with this immensely difficult decision of, do I want to be eaten? Vosalisa obviously agrees to help, follows Baba Yaga inside and fetches her dinner from the oven when told. Baba Yaga eats all of it. And again, I didn't write this down, but literally it's like this huge ass pile of meat and like so many drinks. Like it's a feast for like 12 people. And like, wow. She eats all of it.
Good for her.
Mm-hmm. It's so much food. And she leaves only a crust and a scrap of meat for Vosalisa. As she lays down to sleep, she tells Vosalisa all the chores that she needs to accomplish tomorrow while Baba is gone. Vosalisa waits for Baba Yaga to drop off to sleep, then gives what little food she was left to her doll instead of eating it and asks for help.
Mm-hmm.
The doll promises to do all of her chores. All Vosalisa will have to do is prepare dinner tomorrow. That's okay. It. In the morning, Baba Yaga leaves. The doll does the chores. Vosalisa cooks. And Baba Yaga returns, surprised to find that everything is done. Like, super surprised. Because she gave her, like, a laundry list of items to do.
Mm-hmm.
She asks Vosalisa to do the same thing tomorrow as she eats. And then we repeat. The exact same thing happens the next day.
Mm-hmm.
The next day over dinner, Baba Yaga yells at Vosalisa for just like standing there like an idiot as she's eating. But like, what is she supposed to do? Like, she doesn't get to eat either. So she's literally just like standing there watching Baba Yaga eat.
Awkward.
Yeah. She's like, what the fuck are you doing? So Vosalisa asks if she's allowed to ask questions. And Baba says, sure. But just like keep in mind that not every question yields a good result. So like ask your questions wisely.
That's just like good life advice.
Mm-hmm. So Vosalisa asks who the writers are that she saw on her walk and who she still sees like around the hut that she's seen for like the last 2 days.
Oh.
And Baba Yaga says that they are day, sun, and night. So, which I think is really interesting, really cool. Yeah,
that they just, like, hang out with her.
Yeah, apparently she says that they're her day, sun, and night, so they, like, belong to her.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Satisfied, with this answer, Vosalisa thinks about these invisible servants that she's also seen for like the last 2 days that like obey Baba Yaga's commands. She tells them what to do and then they do it. And I think they just show up as like a pair of hands. That's Ooh. All they appear as. Yeah, it's really weird. That's kind of like the magic elements of all of it is Baba Yaga making these commands and these invisible servants popping up and doing everything that she bids.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking of this at the last minute, Vosalisa's like, you know what? Like, I don't think I'm going to ask the question about the servants. I'm just going to keep that in my noggin and not say nothing.
Got it.
And she goes back to standing there like a weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
Baba Yaga asks her why she doesn't have any more questions. Mm-hmm. Like, you asked one and then you were dumb. Like, what's up with that? And Vosalisa says that she's worried that the answers, like Baba warned, aren't going to yield good results.
Mm-hmm.
Baba Yaga confirms this, saying essentially, asking about things outside my house was smart, because had you asked about anything inside my house, I would have eaten you.
Because, like, nobody's allowed to have that knowledge.
Yeah, she is, I forget how she phrases it, something about, like, tracking dirt. Like, the stuff inside her house, she doesn't want it tracked out.
Oh.
It's hers, it's her business. So, very wise of you to ask about the riders outside. If you had asked about my invisible servants, I would have eaten you.
Hmm.
They keep chatting while Baba Yaga's eating, and Baba Yaga asks how Vosalisa has managed to get all of these chores done for the last 2 days, and which leads me to believe that, like, other people have attempted this and, like, failed.
Mm-hmm.
When Vosalisa says ambiguously that she has this blessing from her mother, Baba Yaga freaks the fuck out and says that she does not want blessed people in her house.
Wow.
I don't want you in here. Yeah. No saints are allowed in Baba Yaga's house. Get the fuck out.
It's understandable.
If you have been blessed in any way, shape, or form, get the fuck out of my house.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag blessed.
She shoves Vosalisa outside, like, immediately. But she rips one of the skulls off of her gate and, like, tosses it at her and it's, like, on a stick. And this skull has blazing eyes, and Baba says, you know, this is the light that I promised. Like, here you go. Now get the fuck out of my house. Go away.
My God. Imagine coming back to your stepsisters with just, like, a head on a stick that has, like, eyeballs on fire. Like, here's your light.
Well, that's exactly what she's going to do.
Oh, my God. Just, like, after 3 days in the woods. Yeah. Like, whoa.
Yeah. So with her fancy flaming skull on a stick, Vosalisa runs home through the forest. Like, literally runs. So just pictured, like, this beautiful, most beautiful girl in the entire village, breakneck speed through a dark forest with a flaming skull on a stick.
My God.
I love that.
Yeah, I do too.
Mm-hmm. When she finally gets home, she finds out that in her absence, her stepmother and her stepsisters haven't been able to light a single candle. And if they brought a lit one in from a neighbor, it extinguished, like, as soon as it got inside.
Woof.
Very creepy. So they are happy to see Vosalisa for, like, the first time in their lives, because she has, like, this flaming skull with her. She has light. But when they take it into the sitting room, the skull glares at Vosalisa's stepmother and sisters and sets them and the whole house on fire.
Oh, my goodness.
Only Vosalisa survives.
What the heck?
The story continues for another paragraph where Vosalisa gets to marry the Tsar and live happily ever after. So Baba Yaga is very much that dual figure here of, like, I'll eat you or help you, but her help is, like, really screwed up.
Yeah.
She does put Vosalis on the path to a happy ending, though.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of stories of Baba Yaga simply, like, terrorizing parties of men who invade her territory, which, mood. but then yes. them terrorizing her back. She's, like, simply just a monster in those stories.
Mm.
She's just there to be a monster, and they're there to attack her back.
Mm-hmm.
One I remember the most is a story where Baba Yaga has 41 daughters. In some stories, she has children.
Mm.
And they marry these 41 sons who have been magically hatched from eggs by this childless couple. And please don't ask me how that works, because I literally don't fucking know.
I like it. I'm there.
Yeah. It's a vibe, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Baba Yaga plans to slaughter the sons in their beds, in their sleep after the wedding, which the sons figure out. So they have their wives swap clothes with them, and Baba Yaga's servants slaughter her daughters on accident instead.
This sounds really familiar.
Yeah.
But I can't remember if it's from, like, if I've seen that kind of thing in, like... like, which tradition I've seen it in. I don't know.
I'm sure that I've seen it somewhere. But, of course, the only thing coming to mind right now is fucking Lord of the Rings. Whenever they stab, like, the empty beds. And it's like, that's not right. That's not the same.
Right. No, but it is similar.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it all comes from the same kind of thing. Where it's mm-hmm. like, you're tricking evil
into stabbing the wrong thing at night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, the men wake up and mount these girls' heads on spikes outside Baba Yaga's house and then ride away. And when Baba Yaga wakes up later and sees it, she sets off in this furious pursuit of these guys, but they escape.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why they're, like, the heroes of this story.
Right. But,
it's a fucked up story. Most of her stories are fucked up stories. Most of the folk tales over in that area and in, like, Germany are fucked up. I don't know what was going on with these people, but they could have easily taken it down, like, a notch or 12. They all could have used some form of therapy. Like, if you've read, like, the Grimm fairy tales, like, somebody needed to sit down with a therapist.
Yes. All of them, everybody.
Big group therapy session about why people are, like, dancing until their legs are, like, fucking nubs. And
yeah, it was scary stuff. I mean, everybody probably was starving and, like, had to eat their own kids. And, like, they all had weird, like, that weird fungus poisoning from, like, moldy bread and stuff. Like, it mm-hmm. wasn't a good time to be alive.
No, it was not. So, yeah. Anywho, another story with Baba Yaga's children involves a heroine with an evil stepmother and stepsister, one stepsister this time. The heroine is given a series of impossible or gross tasks, lighting a fire with bones, fetching water in a sieve, bathing Baba Yaga's kids, who are frogs and worms and rats and insects in this story. Ooh. Yeah, gross. But with some advice from animals and a general can-do attitude, she accomplishes it all. Wow, and
good for her.
Mm-hmm, and Baba Yaga sends her home with a coffer full of money. Her stepmother is jealous of this and sends her own daughter to Baba Yaga in the hopes of also obtaining money. But the daughter horrendously fails all tasks, even stomping some of Baba Yaga's kids to death.
Oh my god. Oh, because they're like insects. I was imagining like babies.
Well, if you had to like wash centipedes and stuff, I might also freak out a little bit.
Yeah, I'd be like, she's not going to miss these ones.
I'll just yeah. Goodbye.
Squash them.
Goodbye. Yeah. So all of this happens, and then Baba Yaga sends her home with a coffer, but she and her mother are surprised to find that it is full of fire that consumes them both. So it's very similar to Vosalisa's story and similar to the role that Baba Yaga plays of helpful if you do right by her, disastrous if you do not.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and I literally found this last night, last minute, because Rolston hid it in a different section of the book, like a coward. But there's a story where Baba Yaga haunts this hut out in the woods where a merchant's daughter and a cripple and a blind man are living.
Sure.
And when the men go out, Baba Yaga sneaks in and sucks on the girl's breasts every day.
Whoa.
To, you know, drain her life force. But it's pretty gay, in my opinion.
It sounds rather gay.
Yeah. So, happy pride.
Happy pride from Baba Yaga. Baba Yaga.
Lesbian icon.
Yeah. Oh my God, she is. So, okay, so she like breastfeeds from the lady. Does that like make her more powerful or just makes the lady like weaker?
I don't know. I know that it makes the lady weaker. I don't know if it makes her more powerful, but she, I don't know if the woman has ever been pregnant. It literally just says she sucks on her breasts. Why is that the go-to? I don't know. I have no idea.
It's the gay agenda.
Yeah, but she's also living with two dudes, and when they come back, she tells them this. But, like, how do you explain that to, like, your two dude roommates? Like, yeah, when you're gone, this woman sneaks in and she sucks on my boobs.
And they're like, sure.
And they're like, could you show us?
Right. Explain it to me, but okay, here, let's act it out.
What if we hid and watched?
I'm not really getting it. Ew, this took a turn. It took a real turn.
Doesn't it always?
Yeah, that's true.
This is by no means an exhaustive list of Baba Yaga's stories, but hopefully they give you an idea of who or what she is. Mm-hmm. Enjoy.
Nice. I'm not going to forget the breastfeeding lady or the skull with the burning eyes. That was my favorite part. It's so interesting that all the different cultures, she's like a figure in a bunch of different ones. Also, like, I feel like there's a lot of fire anxiety, which makes sense because like probably everything was like made out of like wood and straw.
Yeah, it did. She's going to eat our babies and she's going to set us on fire.
That was really interesting. I've always loved like fairy tales and folk tales. Those were like the first thing I read as a kid, and I still love them today. Like, that's the section I go to at the library when I don't know like what I want to read.
I like finding out like the real story behind like the watered down like Disney version of stuff that we get.
Mm-hmm.
Like throwing like people in the ocean and all kinds of shit, and like cutting off their toes and
right.
Yeah. I'm all for that weird shit.
Me too. It's juicy. I have probably 3 minutes before the cat starts screeching at me to be let in, so I'm gonna just jump in. Today, I'm going to be talking about St. Olga of Kiev. Olga was a ruler. Some people call her a princess. Some people call her a queen, a grand duchess. It's one of those Russian words that doesn't have an exact counterpart in English, but she ruled over the territory known at the time as Kievan Rus. I hope that pronunciation is close enough. I looked it up and it was either like very, very Russian, which I cannot do, or it was like Kievan Rus or Kievan Rus. And I was like, well, that's not it.
I kept running into issues where I would like try to find the pronunciation and be like, we literally don't know what word you're talking about. And I would have to go find it in like Cyrillic. And then it would be like, we know what you're talking about now. It's like, damn it.
Yeah. So hopefully that's good enough. That area included parts of modern day Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus. Olga was a badass bitch who took no shit. I have been wanting to research her more for a while, so it was fun to finally have that chance. And it was also fun, like you mentioned at the beginning of your story, to be in a totally different area than where we usually are, and to like get a glimpse of what was going on at the time in a totally different part of the world. My main source is a gigantic book called The Russian Primary Chronicle. The literal translation of the title is The Tale of Bygone Years, which is very cool. I'm very into that. The book was originally thought to be one work by one person. It was attributed to a 12th century monk from Kiev named Nestor, but modern day scholars agree that it's a collection of different manuscripts from different sources. The reason why they think that being that there are too many internal contradictions within it for it to be by one guy.
They've obviously never read my writing.
Exactly. Yeah. And then in workshop, it's like, people don't act like this. She thinks she's a good person, but she's acting bad. People don't do that.
They never contradict themselves.
People never lie. It's like, what is wrong with you? Another big issue with the Primary Chronicle is that it's hard to tell how much is quote unquote true. What is true, really? You know, what is true? I mean, like, what historically happened and what's legend that's been passed down. But my point of view on that topic is always like, well, why do we pass down certain legends and not others? And like, what's important in the legends that's worth studying? And so like, less of a focus on, did this literally happen exactly how they're saying it did, versus like, why are we telling this story? Why do we keep coming back to this story? But if you're listening to this podcast, you already know all that. So this is how the Russian Primary Chronicle begins. These are the narratives of bygone years regarding the origin of the land of Rus, the first princes of Kiev, and from what source the land of Rus had its beginning. Let us accordingly begin this narrative. After the flood, the sons of Noah divided the earth among them. So it's like beginning. We're picking up right after the literal dick move. If you don't know what I'm talking about, episode 13. So of the three sons of Noah, Japheth is the one who has dominion over the land of Rus. So according to the Primary Chronicle, all Slavs are descendants of Japheth. We skip ahead, blah, 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 Tower of Babel, blah, blah, blah. The Slavs disperse, they're scattered to the winds, they split into different groups, and they settle the area, and they eventually mix with a group of people known as the Varangians. The etymology, I sound like I'm drunk. I'm not drunk. It's allergies.
The etymology.
Which is actually what I do talk about when I'm drunk, is etymology. The etymology of the word Varangian is probably a combination of the Old Norse var, meaning pledge or faith, and Genji, or companion, meaning those who have sworn an oath, basically. So the Varangians are Vikings, Norse people, mainly Swedish, who during the 8th century settled along the river routes that connected Scandinavia and the Eastern Roman Empire, aka the Byzantine Empire, aka Byzantium. So most of the time on the podcast, when we talk about the Roman Empire, we're talking about the Western, but not today. Today it's the Eastern. So the Varangians, these Vikings, settled along the river routes between the Baltic and the Black Seas. For the geographically challenged, because I did consult Google Maps.
I don't know where my seas are.
I don't either. So, well, here you go. The Baltic Sea is an arm of the Atlantic Ocean around Scandinavia, and the Black Sea is near Constantinople, the Balkan Peninsula, and like the river route would lead all the way to Greece. there are mentions of many, many rivers in the Primary Chronicle, which I deeply enjoyed. I'm not being sarcastic. It reminded me of St. Hildegard's book, Physica, which I did buy, like, after I researched it. In episode 10, I did buy that book. And in that book, she talks about all the different rivers of Europe and their like physical and alchemical properties. I'm like obsessed. I'm definitely like a river bitch. So we begin our actual story with the founding of the state of Kievan Rus. So I'll just like read from the chronicle because it does a good job. The tributaries of the Varangians drove them back beyond the sea and, refusing them further tribute, set out to govern themselves. There was no law among them, but tribe rose against tribe. Discord thus ensued among them, and they began to war one against another. They said to themselves, "Let us seek a prince who may rule over us and judge us according to the law." They accordingly went overseas to the Varangian Ruses. These particular Varangians were known as Ruses. It's like, yes, thank you.
No way.
No fucking way, dude. Just as some are called Swedes and others Normans, English, and Gotlanders, for they were thus named. They said to the people of Rus, "Our land is great and rich, but there is no order in it. Come to rule and reign over us." Side note, I'm sure this is exactly how it went. The colonized people begged.
Please come rule us.
The friendly colonizers to please rule them and accept their tributes.
That sounds like something Americans wrote.
For sure. And then it goes on. They thus selected three brothers with their kinsfolk who took with them all the Ruses and migrated. The oldest, Rurik, located himself in Novgorod. The second, Sinias, at Belozero. I'm just guessing. I'm just flat out guessing at these names, by the way. And the third, Truvor, in Izborsk. On account of these Varangians, the district of Novgorod became known as the Land of Rus. The present inhabitants of Novgorod are descended from the Varangian race, but aforetime they were Slavs. So, the Vikings, the Varangians, established and ruled the state of Kievan Rus, and this was like a multi-ethnic area, tons of different small tribes. I always say that because I don't like getting into like specifics. Chronicle...
Just hand wave it.
Mm-hmm. Who cares? It was so long ago. Nobody remembers.
Like you in World War II all over again.
So long ago. I cannot be bothered to learn what happened 80 years ago. The Chronicle is kind of funny. It's like there were the so-and-sos and they were proud and haughty and God destroyed them. And then there were the other guys who were nice and peaceful. And then there were the other guys and God destroyed them. And then we get to a tribe called either the Derevlians or the Drevlians. It's spelled different ways. So their like little state is called Dereva. And about them, it says the Derevlians, on the other hand, existed in bestial fashion and lived like cattle. They killed one another and ate every impure thing. And I'm like, do cows do that? Is that what cattle do? Is that how cattle live? They just murder each other all the time? Never heard that, but okay. They ate every impure thing. When the people gathered together for games, for dancing, and for all other devilish amusements, editorializing, the men on these occasions carried off wives for themselves and each took any woman with whom he had arrived at an understanding. In fact, they even had two or three wives apiece. Whenever a death occurred, a feast was held over the corpse, and then a great pyre was constructed on which the deceased was laid and burned. Such customs were observed by them and the other pagans, since they did not know the law of God, but made a law unto themselves. So these are the bad guys. They attack travelers. They're cannibals. It's very similar to episode 13, where like in the Middle Ages, there's this really intense fear of travel and the unknown that manifests as like the wild tales of like those people over there, the scary bad people. So 2 years later, after the founding of the state, two of the ruling brothers die, and the eldest brother, Rurik, is the only one left to rule. Throughout most of the Primary Chronicle, the Byzantine emperors are attacking the area, trying to claim the land and convert the people to Christianity. So the kings of Kievan Rus, or the grand princes, whatever you want to call them, these are the military campaigns they're fighting. They're constantly dealing with the neighboring tribes and trying to get them to pay tribute to them. And they're also fighting the Byzantine Empire. So it's a complete shit show constantly. So Rurik also dies somewhere between the year 870 and the year 879. And on his deathbed, he bequeaths the realm to like a distant relative named Oleg. Rurik did have a son named Igor, but he was too young to rule, so Oleg took over as the regent. He's also known as Oleg of Novgorod, or Oleg the Seer, or the Prophet.
He's on my list to talk about eventually.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I won't get too into them, because I was like fascinated by him. And
oh, you're welcome to talk about him.
Well, probably just a little bit. I don't want to like...
Go ahead.
So basically, he's just a really successful military leader. That's like his main thing. And he goes on a bunch of campaigns and adds a ton of territory to the state of Kievan Rus and money, because all of like the subjugated tribes have to pay tribute to him. And in the chronicle, in the midst of like talking all about Oleg, we hear, we get like two sentences that introduce Saint Olga. It says, as Igor grew up, he followed after Oleg and obeyed his instructions. A wife, Olga by name, was brought to him from, I forgot to look it up, Skolf, P-S-K-O-V, however you might pronounce that.
P-S-K-O-V, I don't know.
Well, we tried. We did our best. You thought about it so seriously and you're like, don't know.
I don't know. It's in God's hands.
Mm-hmm. Amen. A wife, Olga, was brought to him. So somewhere in the midst of all this, Olga marries Igor. So then we go back to Oleg and we hear more about his wars and his adventures. It's pretty cool. I especially liked the legend about his death. I had a whole section from the Primary Chronicle, but now I don't know if I want to read it, if you're going to talk about him in the future.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so yeah, I'll just quote it. It says, now autumn came, and Oleg bethought him of his horse that he had caused to be well-fed, yet had never mounted. For on one occasion, he had made inquiry of the wonder-working magicians as to the ultimate cause of his death. One magician replied, O prince, it is from the steed which you love and on which you ride that you shall meet your death. Oleg then reflected and determined never to mount this horse or even to look upon it again. So he gave command that the horse should be properly fed, but never led into his presence. He thus let several years pass until he had attacked the Greeks. After he returned to Kiev, 4 years elapsed, but in the fifth, he thought of the horse through which the magicians had foretold that he should meet his death. He thus summoned his senior squire and inquired as to the whereabouts of the horse. The squire answered that he was dead. Oleg laughed and mocked the magician, exclaiming, soothsayers tell untruths, and their words are naught but falsehood. This horse is dead, but I am still alive. Then he commanded that a horse should be saddled. Let me see his bones, said he. He rode to the place where the bare bones and skull lay. Dismounting from his horse, he laughed and remarked, so I was supposed to receive my death from this skull? And he stamped upon the skull with his foot, but a serpent crawled forth from it and bit him in the foot, so that in consequence he sickened and died. Don't try to get around a prophecy. If you have a prophecy about yourself, just accept it. You're not going to be able to figure anything out. And then the Chronicle proceeds to have like an existential crisis about like witchcraft and prophecy. Because it's trying to do that thing where you hold two opposing ideas in your brain at the same time. The first idea is that witchcraft is real and bad. And the second is that anything that exists is created by God. So it struggles with that for a few pages. And the conclusion it kind of reaches is that, like, God does sometimes create things that we need to overcome. And, like, the journey of overcoming those things is going to bring us closer to God. Like, that's what it settles on. And it's like, okay. And then we get into the reign of Igor. Like I mentioned before, he had married Olga while Oleg was still alive. The chronicle says that Olga was 15 at the time of their marriage, but we don't know her birth date. She was probably of Varangian descent based on the city she lived in that nobody in the world can pronounce. Based
nobody
on that,
at all.
If we can't do it, who can?
Surely not Russians.
Of course not. Ridiculous. It's ridiculous that it only has one vowel near all the way near the end. What are you supposed to do with the first four letters?
That's how I Three feel letters. About a particular French city. R-O-U-E-N.
Rouen.
Yeah.
Rouen.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah, what's mine? I forget. I don't want to talk about it. It makes me upset. gets me all riled up. So Oleg had done all this, like, consolidating of power. He had established the capital of Kiev, where Igor and Olga now lived, and he had subjugated all the neighboring tribes. But now that he was dead, some of the tribes decided, no, we will no longer be participating in the tribute thing. We are not interested in giving you money. Unsubscribe. And one of these tribes is the Derevlians, who I mentioned before, the bad guys. Under Oleg's rule, they had fought in battles alongside Kievan Rus against the Byzantine Empire, but not anymore. So not only are they not paying tribute, they're not helping fight the empire either, so they need to go. That needs to change. In 945, Igor marched on their capital to try and get them to pay tribute to him. Because his army was much greater than theirs, they submitted and paid him tribute. But on the way home, he was, like, counting up all his coins or whatever, his money bag, I assume. And he was like, you know, this is not enough. So he went back with a smaller escort, and the Derevlians murdered him. So there's a lesson somewhere in there, a couple maybe.
Don't get greedy.
Don't get greedy. Also, why would you think, like, you would be okay with, like, a smaller army when the only reason they didn't kill you was because of your big army? He's not the rightest, Igor. So after Igor's death, Olga ruled Kievan Rus as a regent for their three-year-old son, Sviatoslav. It's a mouthful.
Beautiful.
Thank you. And then I'll quote the chronicle again. The Derevlians then said, "See, we have killed the prince of Rus. Let us take his wife Olga for our prince Mal, and then we shall obtain possession of Sviatoslav and work our will upon him." So they sent their best men, 20 in number, to Olga by boat. So they show up, and Olga's like, "Welcome, welcome." And they tell her, like, "Hey, we killed your husband, so now you're going to come with us, and you're going to be Prince Mal's wife." That's just, like, how this is going to go. And I'll just read again. So Olga replies, quote, "Your proposal is pleasing to me indeed. My husband cannot rise again from the dead, but I desire to honor you tomorrow in the presence of my people. Return now to your boat and remain there with an aspect of arrogance. I shall send for you on the morrow, and you shall say, 'We will not ride on horses nor go on foot. Carry us in our boat,' and you shall be carried in your boat." Thus she dismissed them to their vessel. Now Olga gave command that a large, deep ditch should be dug in the castle with the hall outside the city. Thus, on the morrow, Olga, as she sat in the hall, sent for the strangers, and her messengers approached them and said, Olga summons you to great honor. But they replied, we will not ride on horseback, nor in wagons, nor go on foot. Carry us in our boats. The people of Kiev then lamented, slavery is our lot. Our prince is killed, and our princess intends to marry their prince. So they carried the Derevlians in their boat. The latter sat on the cross benches in great robes, puffed up with pride. They thus were borne into the court before Olga, and when the men had brought the Derevlians in, they dropped them into the trench along with the boat. Olga bent over and inquired whether they found the honor to their taste. They answered that it was worse than the death of Igor. She then commanded that they should be buried alive, and they were thus buried. Then Olga sent a message back to the Derevlians, being like, hi guys, thanks for the messengers. It was great to meet them. They're here. They can't come to the phone right now, but they're definitely not murdered. Here's the thing. If you really want me to come back to your land and marry your prince, I'm going to need like a bit better of an escort. I'm going to need your most distinguished men to come get me. I am royalty, so send your very best and I'll go with them in style. Love, Olga. And she like kisses the letter and like spritzes it with Chanel number 5 perfume or whatever. So all these high-ranking Drevlians show up and Olga's like, I'm so glad you're here, so glad we could do this. I've prepared a giant feast. The only thing is, you guys have been on the road, you smell awful. Why don't you go take a bath in the bathhouse and then you can come to dinner. So they all go to the bathhouse and Olga has the doors locked and the bathhouse is set on fire. So then she sends another message. And she's like, hi, it's me again. I'm on my way. Please prepare a great feast in my honor with great quantities of mead, because I am a grieving widow and I would like to weep over my husband's tomb. I think I deserve that. So she does go with her own escort and they feast. The Drevlians get obliterated. They're all just drunk off their asses. And then Olga orders her men to kill them all. The primary chronicle says that they massacred 5,000 Drevlians. And Olga escapes and goes back to Kiev to prepare an army to finish them off for good. The ensuing battle initially goes really well for Olga. She and her army defeat the Drevlians easily and drive them back to their capital city, which she then lays siege to. However, the siege goes on for about a year with no success. It's at a standstill. The people won't come out and surrender. So Olga like gets out a megaphone and she's like, y'all, the battle is over. All of your outlying lands have already been conquered and submitted to tribute. And yet, like, a handful of you are still in the city like a bunch of cowards starving to death. Just, like, come out and promise to pay me tribute and I won't kill you and you won't starve to death. And then, like, one guy, like, pokes his head over the wall or whatever. And he's like, no, we're scared that you're going to kill us anyway because you're, like, a crazy sadistic bitch. And Olga's like, don't you think I've done enough killing? Like, I've massacred and massacred. I'm really tired of massacring. Like, I'm turning over a new leaf. And I'll tell you what, if you give me like 3 sparrows and 3 pigeons from every family in the city as a tribute, I will lift the siege. And the Drevlians are like, fuck yeah, that's nothing. We have so many pigeons. Like, this town has a pigeon problem. This is a win-win.
We have so many fucking birds.
The birds are taking over the city. Like, it's ridiculous. All we have is birds. That's probably what they've been eating. So they give her all the birds. How? I don't know. I don't know the logistics.
Bunch of nets.
A bunch of nets, perhaps.
I would have paid to have watched that film. I'm just like throwing nets over like fucking pigeons and shit.
Chasing around the birds. Yeah, I don't know the exact logistics, perhaps large nets. But she gets the birds And she tells her army, here's our arts and crafts project. We're going to tie a little piece of cloth and a little piece of sulfur, wrapped in a piece of cloth. And we're going to tie that around the bird's legs. And that night they set the cloth on fire and they release the birds, and the birds all go back to their nests within the city, and the city burns to the ground. It says, there was not a house that was not consumed, and it was impossible to extinguish the flames because all the houses caught fire at once. So the townspeople are fleeing the city as this is happening, and Olga tells her soldiers to do one of three things with the people. She's like, go ahead and kill a bunch of them. And then she's like, the ones you don't want to kill, you can take as slaves. And then leave a few to pay me money every now and then. So that's the end of the conflict between Kiev von Rus and the Drevlians. So Olga just went back to Kiev and kept on ruling. She got a lot of marriage proposals during this time. Not sure why.
Like, this crazy bitch who set a whole city on fire with birds.
She's the one. as you can imagine, probably lots of rulers wanted to marry her while she, before her son came of age and became king. Mm-hmm. One of these rulers was Emperor Constantine VII. In the 950s, Olga traveled to Constantinople to meet the Byzantine emperor. The chronicle doesn't say why. It doesn't mention what her motivations were for her visit, but it goes into a lot of detail about what happened when she was there. It says that when Emperor Constantine saw her, he thought she was super hot. It says, quote, he conversed with her and remarked that she was worthy to reign with him in his city. When Olga heard his words, she replied that she was still a pagan, and that if he desired to baptize her, he should perform this function himself. Otherwise, she was unwilling to accept baptism. The emperor, with the assistance of the patriarch, accordingly baptized her. When Olga was enlightened, she rejoiced in soul and body. The patriarch, who instructed her in the faith, said to her, blessed art thou among the women of Rus, for thou hast loved the light and quit the darkness. The sons of Rus shall bless thee to the last generation of thy descendants. He taught her the doctrine of the church and instructed her in prayer and fasting, in almsgiving, and in the maintenance of chastity. She bowed her head, and like a sponge absorbing water, she eagerly drank in his teachings. Gross, but okay. The princess bowed before the patriarch, saying, through thy prayers, Holy Father, may I be preserved from the crafts and assaults of the devil. At her baptism, she was christened Helena, after the ancient empress, mother of Constantine the Great. So the chronicle says that the reason Olga asked the emperor to baptize her was specifically so that he wouldn't think it was right to marry her, because the process of baptism creates kind of like a familial relationship, like a godparent or a step parent or something like that. Like, it would feel incesty to marry somebody you had baptized. So after the baptism, Constantine does ask Olga to marry him, and she says, how can you marry me after yourself baptizing me and calling me your daughter? For among Christians, that is unlawful, as you yourself must know. Then the emperor said, Olga, you have outwitted me. He gave her many gifts of gold, silver, silks, and various vases. Various vases makes me laugh.
Just all these fucking vases.
He was just getting rid of them. He didn't want them. They were cluttering up his house.
They were just in a back room. They didn't match anything.
He's like, do you want these?
I'm just going to sell them.
I can't get anyone to take them. I was just going to put them on eBay, but you can have them.
I was going to have a rummage sale, but honestly, this would save me the trouble.
Honestly, a rummage sale is a whole thing.
I'd have to put out tables and put stickers on everything.
Post it on Facebook. I just can't. So he gives her a bunch of vases, and he dismissed her, still calling her his daughter. So that's how she got around that marriage proposal. So she returns to Rus and she makes some attempts to convert her subjects to Christianity, beginning with her son, who at this point... And
they are all like, absolutely, she's going to set me on fire.
Just like, you know, is that what we're doing now? Great. I'm so on board.
Yep. Sign me up.
No, it does not go that way. I would do whatever she asked me to do personally.
But, I would let her walk on me and I would say thank you.
True. Very accurate. Yep. Yeah, so she tries first to convert her son, who is like a military leader at this point, but he wants no part of Christianity. He's like, look, it's okay for you if you secretly believe these like new things, like that's fine. But like the people are not gonna like it. They're gonna make fun of me if I convert, like I won't have their respect anymore. But he does agree that he is no longer going to actively persecute Christians.
I guess I won't put their heads on spikes anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm. She's like, yeah, okay, bare minimum.
Really low bar. But...
super low. The bar is like below the earth.
On the floor.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, okay, I won't execute anybody for being Christian anymore, which is actually like a really big step. So Olga doesn't get credit for Christianizing the area that will later become Russia, but she does take like that very first step. She remained in charge of Kiev during her son's military campaigns, of which there were many. She like held down the fort while he was gone, and she instituted a few different reforms. She changed the system for gathering tributes by appointing her own officials to do the gathering instead of like relying on the other tribes to gather things themselves. Seems like a no-brainer. But this was the first legal reform recorded in Eastern Europe and potentially the very beginning of what would later be the Russian system of laws. She also established many churches and trading posts, some of which still exist today. In the year 968, the capital of Kiev was under siege by the people.
From this place.
From the place, you know. If I had to guess, I did not look it up. If I had to guess, I would say Pekin eggs.
Pekin eggs.
Yeah. And I will offer nothing else. They were another neighboring tribe that had been warring with Kievan Rus for centuries. Olga successfully defended the city during the siege, and after it was lifted, like directly after it was lifted, she got sick. I don't know with what, but she was sick. And her son chose that time to tell her that he planned on moving. He said, quote, I do not care to remain in Kiev, but should prefer to live on the Danube, since that is the center of my realm, where all riches are concentrated. Gold, silks, wine, and various fruits from Greece, silver and horses from Hungary and Bohemia, and from Rus, furs, wax, honey, and slaves. You know, the four food groups. But Olga made reply, you behold me in my weakness. Why do you desire to depart from me? For she was already in precarious health. She thus remonstrated with him and begged him first to bury her and then to go wheresoever he would. 3 days later, Olga died. Her son wept for her with great mourning, as did likewise her grandsons and all the people. So she died in 969, and in 988, her grandson Vladimir established Christianity as the state's official religion. So her efforts weren't successful during her lifetime, but she did plant the seeds. And then the chronicle has a little paragraph that I liked. It said, Olga was the precursor of the Christian land, even as the day spring precedes the sun and as the dawn precedes the day. For she shone like a moon by night, and she was radiant among the infidels like a pearl in the mire, eye roll. Since the people were soiled, double eye roll, and not yet purified of their sin by holy baptism, but she herself was cleansed by this sacred purification. She was the first from Rus to enter the kingdom of God. And the sons of Rus thus praise her as their leader, for since her death, she has interceded with God in their behalf. Olga was canonized in 1547. She is a saint in the Roman Catholic Church, as well as the Russian Orthodox Church and the Eastern Orthodox Church. It's interesting, we don't get a ton of overlap between Eastern and Western saints. This is one of the rare times that we both consider her a saint. The other ones would be like, mostly just like apostles, like Paul lived in the Eastern Roman Empire, but like the Western Church also considers him a saint. It's like kind of rare. She was given the epithet equal to the apostles. Her feast day is July 11th, the date of her death. So it's coming up in celebration. I would suggest
setting something on fire.
Set something on fire, burn something to the ground.
Bury someone alive.
Find a person, bury them alive, maybe release some birds, capture birds with a net and release them.
Make sure it's somebody else's birds, which you then send back to them on fire.
Capture your neighbor's pigeon, cockatoo, whatever, in a net, set it on fire and give it back. Happy St. Olga Day. Yeah, I think her story is like kind of slowly making its way back into like modern consciousness. Like You sent me that TikTok about her, and was that you?
I watched a TikTok on her. I don't know if I sent it to you, but I send you like everything Catholic that comes across my FYP. So
either, I swear to God, it was both you and Madeline sent me that TikTok like within a week. And I was like, this is weird that this, like, this must be going around. So I think she's a really cool figure, like feminist icon, unhinged, petty bitch. Like, I love it. She's got it all. And that's St. Olga of Kiev.
I like her a lot. She was super smart, like when it comes to strategy. And I enjoy the fact that that's like not watered down at all in her story. That it's like, oh, it's not like she got lucky or anything. It's like, no, she outwitted like everyone multiple times, all of these dudes. Mm-hmm. And we're going to celebrate that.
Yeah, we're going to celebrate it by like elevating her to the highest possible honor. And like, I love her like playing on the stereotype that they held of her, like using that to her own advantage, like, oh, I'm just a poor little lady.
I just want to cry over my husband. And you know, I'll do whatever you want because I'm just so weak. And then she buries them alive.
Yeah, love to see it.
Yes, we do. There was a lot of fire today.
Ooh, there was a lot of fire.
There was a lot of setting of people on fire, setting buildings on fire.
What's going on, Eastern Europe?
Why are you setting so much shit on fire?
Maybe think about it.
Yeah, what's up with all the conflagration, huh?
There's a lot of conflagration. What are they up to over there? What are you doing? I have no idea what I'm gonna choose for next time. I have not given it a single thought.
Who knows? Who knows? It's Antarctica, not us.
Australia.
The public schools in Antarctica.
And now my thesis on public schools in Antarctica.
Oh no.
My dissertation. <It's> quite short as dissertations go. I would love to go to Antarctica. I'm obsessed with penguins. I think they're majestic.
The inside of their mouths, though.
I'll take your word for it because I don't really want to look at it. I'm scared.
It'll ruin penguins for you.
Or will it make them even better?
It will kind of remind you of like the keyhole in Baba Yaga's story.
Full of teeth.
Like, yeah, it's really fucking creepy.
Bunch of teeth.
Just a whole bunch.
I'm going to look it up.
Do it.
The cats are destroying my house. Thank you, everybody, for listening. It was really fun to do a requested episode. So if you're thinking to yourself, oh, I have an idea, but I don't know if it's a good idea, send it.
Send it. I don't care how vague it is. Just send it.
Actually, kind of like the vaguer, the better.
You should, like, we get really vague with each other sometimes that one of us might pick something and, like, we'll pitch it to the other person as, like, Russia, 1800s, mm-hmm. midwife.
I'll just be like, France? Fire. France? Question mark? England?
Yeah, we just throw some words out there and see what sticks.
Yep. Cannibal?
And then Sarah's like, we can't do cannibal because that's all Catholic. So it's like, damn, you're right.
That's all we do.
Yeah.
Cannibalize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know how to get a hold of us. We will have a picture of the chicken hut and probably the penguin mouth.
The penguin mouth. We have to now.
Yeah, and a bunch of birds. Just 16 pictures of different birds.
Just a whole lot of pigeons.
Just like scroll, 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 pigeon, 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 pigeon. And yeah, until next time, thanks be to God.
Blessed be.